Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast which should know by now not to make predictions. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
Now, at the start of this year, before John Bolton was National Security Advisor, before Ken Loach asked for MPs protesting against racism to be deselected, before it turned out that Facebook is controlling our private data and there's no escape from anything, a time of innocence, in other words, Steve and I made some political predictions for 2018. Those of you who've been loyal listeners since the general election last year and heard our general election predictions will know that generally we'll call one or two minor details right, a few of the niche predictions right, and then miss the big picture entirely. This is the first of two episodes, and we're going to have a look in this one at our movers and shakers in 2018. And we're going to try and discover just how wrong we were. A different person from each political group, so like leader, cabinet minister, shadow cabinet minister, and so on, and say who we thought would be the biggest movers and shakers in 2018. So we think a reasonable amount of time has gone by to see how right we were, how wrong we were. So Steve, in terms of the leader we thought would be most influential on British politics, I picked Theresa May and you picked Jeremy Corbyn.
Yep. I did pick Jeremy Corbyn. The main basis of that choice was I wasn't necessarily convinced that Theresa May would still be leader. Her position was, in many ways, quite weak at the top of the year. As it stands, though, she's still in position, and you can make a very strong case that she's had a better year so far than Jeremy Corbyn. Now, granted, Theresa May's year was starting at a very low benchmark, and even just moving up to average means that she's seen an improvement, but a couple of good crises has led to her position being much more stable.
Strong and stable. No, weak and stable, one might say. I picked May, and that looked like a very, very bad pick, literally 3 days after I picked her, because there was that wonderful boxed reshuffle where everyone refused to move, Justin Greening got sacked, and the writing really did seem on the wall. But as you say, almost just by, and as we hinted on last week's show, almost just by sticking around, May has earned a little bit of grudging respect. I suppose that's the thing with Britain. It's the Tony Benn effect, isn't it? If you stay alive for long enough, people forget all the terrible, terrible things you did and you just become nice and cuddly.
Yeah, pretty much. Although I think there are very few people who would describe Theresa May as cuddly.
Jeremy Corbyn hasn't had a brilliant 2018 at the moment because the crises that you've referred to on Russia, on Syria, national security, are generally, and anti-Semitism as well, are generally ones where he is at odds with his MPs.
And not just his MPs, generally speaking, a lot of the British public as well. It's very difficult to have a good crisis if you're in the minority. And certainly on things like anti-Semitism, certainly on things like Russia, he's very much in the minority. Syria is a slightly different kettle of fish, but it's still very difficult for anybody to have a good crisis in that regards, because it's such a complicated and, you know, no-win scenario for everybody.
And what I think last week's episode that we did with Nikki Brennan, I think, does highlight, though, is the precarious nature of a leader's strength, or indeed of their weakness, because in 3 or 4 weeks' time, we'll have local elections. If Labour makes big thumping gains in those elections, actually Jeremy Corbyn will seem much, much stronger than Theresa May was. And I think what then will be interesting will be the reaction of Labour figures, both in the parliamentary party and in the membership, to other wider issues of Labour's position on Syria, how dedicated they are to rooting out anti-Semitism in the party. It may well be, well, actually, I have a horrible feeling that you might end up with it doesn't really matter if it's not costing us many votes.
I think that is a very real threat when it comes to the anti-Semitism situation in Labour. But equally, I think it's important here to say that so much of the kind of, it's more the perception of how you've done in local elections than how you actually did that matters more than anything. If you end up in a situation where the Tories have been, as they are currently, spinning like they're going to lose everything in London, they're going to struggle to win anything in Birmingham, and just due to how unpopular they are and all that sort of stuff, that kind of scene setting and expectations management means that when it turns out that actually they don't do that badly, or they do better than people seem to expect, that strengthens May's position. It might be the most likely outcome, actually, when you look at it, look at the cold hard facts and do the analysis. But because nobody's been saying that this is the minimum of what should be expected, suddenly May looks much stronger than she is.
But at the moment, one up to me, I think.
I would say so, yes.
Cabinet Minister, I picked the Govester, the one and only Michael Gove, and Steve picked Jeremy Hunt. Both of these were quite solid picks. Both of them have been quite influential in government. Michael Gove has been a bit of a revelation as environmental minister, where he's trying to atone for destroying the lives of the nation's children by saving puppies and ivory and hedgehogs and various animals.
I would say he's not trying to save ivory, he's trying to ban ivory.
He's trying to save it from the
trying to save poachers. The elephants from the poachers by banning ivory.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, the wonderful, yeah. Anyway, as we talked about last week, Jeremy Hunt is trying to save the nation's health service from himself, rectifying years of underfunding, which his government has undertook, by increasing spending in a long-term plan. And that seems to be taken up by the Prime Minister. So they've both had pretty decent 2018s.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think if you're going to make a choice between which of these two individuals has had a better year, so far, you've got to just look at which of them is actually leading the politics agenda in some capacity. Given the focus on Brexit across every department, for the most part, there's not a lot of actual legislation occurring, which means any department and any minister or secretary who's able to actually make headlines with actual initiatives, there's a very strong case to say that they are the most effective. And in this instance, as much as it pains me to admit it, because it would be another point for yourself, I think that goes to Michael Gove. Hunt is clearly still having an influence behind the scenes, but he's not setting the agenda, and Gove is.
The Govester. Well done, Michael Gove. All isn't forgiven, though. Okay, let's see how we do on this one. So this was Shadow Cabinet members. I picked Angela Rayner and you picked Emily Thornberry.
The only reason I went for Emily Thornberry at the time was because you had picked Angela Rayner. I don't think it's a secret to say that both you and I are actually quite big fans of Angela Rayner. But actually, I think over this past year so far, it's Emily Thornberry who's actually stepped up to the plate a bit more. Thornberry has been very effective at kind of holding a distinct position on foreign policy in the Labour Party. That's not just rabbiting Jeremy Corbyn's lines. And Jeremy Corbyn, his big deal is foreign policy. The fact that Thornberry has been able to kind of maintain that unique voice without losing any prestige amongst the left, without earning any ire amongst from Corbyn and his ranks, is very impressive. And on the flip side of that, Angela Rayner is, you know, she's still a fantastic politician and still very, very effective. But she's been given a brief which has the in education, which has the potential to be very meaningful and to lead an awful lot of debate and to be radical in. Got those tidbits of information about this National Education Service, which is something that she's supposed to be building out, which we still don't know what it's supposed to do. We still don't know what its core kind of message and focus is supposed to be. Ultimately, the failure to outline that sort of stuff means I think she sinks down below Thornberry.
So there's a couple of things to say. That I think one of them is that in terms of Emily Thornberry being able to have a quite distinct position from Jeremy on foreign policy, I think she's able to do that. She's got that wiggle room because Jeremy shows loyalty to her, and she's shown loyalty to Jeremy and stuck by him during the attempted leadership revolt a couple of years ago. And Jeremy, I think, shows lots of loyalty in return, and that's been a feature of Corbyn's leadership so far. I think with Angela Rayner, she has shown some influence here. So at the start of the year, she called for Toby Young to go from the Office of Students as a regulator, and Toby Young did go, so she's showing a little bit of influence there on government policy. I think the other thing with education at the moment is the issue of education cuts is a big issue And that's the line that Labour is hammering at the moment. It's hammering down a very, very anti-cuts message. And I think actually that is being very politically effective. You could see that at the last election when a lot of the votes of teachers went overwhelmingly to Labour, probably as a result of Gove's reforms, also as a result of these cuts were happening to schools. I'm not that worried that 4 years away from a prospective Labour government, we haven't got a detailed education policy. That's okay.
I think you have a fair point in terms of, you know, the role of education cuts to, and then the fact that it's a big campaign for Labour nationally, drilling down into like the local elections as it is. But ultimately, that's a campaign and that's a position which would have been taken by any education spokesperson in the Labour Party. That's not something that's unique to Angela Rayner, and I think that says more to the circumstances that she's found herself in with that role rather than anything from herself. In fact, in many ways, I'd say it's an open goal. If she'd failed to kind of make headway with this, then something would be seriously wrong and she shouldn't be in the shadow cabinet. With education, given the circumstances, there's a lot of room for influence. And I just don't think that getting rid of Toby Young is that much of a success.
Are we basically saying Rayner against Thornbury is a score draw, but Thornbury wins on away goals?
I'd say so, yes, currently, just because she's been able to hold on to a position in a much trickier role.
Righty-ho. Backbenchers. I chose Sarah Wollaston. You chose Nicky Morgan. Again, both pretty similar. In prominent select committee chairs, both quite independent. They are those mutineers that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
They've rebelled on stuff like grammar schools, rebelled on stuff like Brexit. Haven't done a lot of rebelling this time, this year. But that's mainly because Theresa May hasn't really allowed them to rebel because she's not really bringing any legislation forward.
Parliament is basically very, very quiet at the moment. There's not a lot going through the House because the government keeps on kicking it down the road. We were supposed to have had Michael Gove's Environment Bill was originally set to come out by now. We were supposed to have had a health bill, I believe, and we were supposed to have had an immigration mm-hmm. bill as well. All of which have been kicked down the road, either into the summer or into autumn for various reasons.
And there's the Great Repeal Bill. In fact, well, we talked at the start of the year about a good 8 or 10 bits of legislation that need to be completed for Brexit to happen.
And none of them have even entered the House, really.
No, and there's the customs union thing as well. And probably one of the reasons why May hasn't brought in some sort of bill on that is because she's terrified that an amendment on customs union membership wouldn't pass. So I can't really tell with these backbenchers at the moment if they're... It's a bit... I suppose it depends how you want to interpret it, isn't it? Are they being not very influential because they're not really doing much, or is it that they're being uber influential because they are
they're scaring the government?
Yes.
Either way, I think it's a nil-nil draw on this point and no points to anybody, because we can't say either way because there's no evidence that we can see that either of them has been particularly influential.
And we do like evidence-based policy.
It's true, we do.
Okay, so nil score draw, let's move on then. So, non-English politician, I picked Ruth Davidson, Scottish Conservative leader. You picked Arlene Foster,
mm-hmm.
DUP.
Yep, I went for Arlene Foster for the simple reason that DUP are the tail that's going to wag the Tory dog. In a lot of ways, you're not seeing this overtly. What you are seeing, though, is the government's position over the Northern Irish border being made an awful lot more trickier.
We saw in December the vetoing of a prospective UK-EU agreement because of the Irish border. It's still an issue which is being kicked down the road but is dogging Brexit negotiations. And I think you can see the difference between that and the attitude that the British government took on fisheries. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Scottish Conservative MPs were very angry with the position that had been taken on fisheries. One of them, I believe, compared it to being as popular as a bucket full of cold sick. Ruth Davidson, a little bit like Sarah Wollaston, Nicky Morgan, a bit like a lot of Remainers generally keeping their powder dry. You're not having people go out every day saying, stop Brexit, stop Brexit, stop Brexit. What instead, I think it's almost a bit of a war of attrition. And I think at some point, people in the Labour Party, like the Chukka Amana wing of the Labour Party, Ruth Davidson, the Tory mutineers, will all coalesce in a big orgasmatron of Remain, but that's not going to happen yet.
No.
But it will happen at some point.
Yeah, so at the moment, advantage Foster.
So then, politician from outside the big two parties, I went for Nicola Sturgeon. I think I was originally going to go for Arlene Foster.
But I beat you to it.
But you beat me to it. You went for a bit of a wild card. You went for Leila Moran, who I think is still the Lib Dems education spokesperson. Yes. Yeah,
yeah. I went for Leila Moran just because, one, the Lib Dems are themselves a bit of a wild card. If they can find themselves getting back into the mainstream of politics, they have a massive potential to make an impact. And ultimately, there's only really two MPs amongst their number who have probably got the potential to do that. One of them's Joe Swinson, the deputy leader. The other, I think, is Leila Moran, who is a new MP, but is very, very popular amongst the Lib Dem membership. But I would happily admit, at the moment, can't see anything wider breaking out.
Again, it's very difficult, and we've talked about this in other episodes, but it's very difficult for the Lib Dems to try and get in to the national conversation consistently, because they're not the main third party, because essentially not having a regular slot on Question Time, not having a regular spot on PMQs, it's really, really hard to make any impact on the national conversation. And I'm going to admit, this podcast is not the hottest on Scottish politics, but in terms of Nicola Sturgeon's influence on the UK political scene, there are occasional things where she says that we need to stop Brexit and we need to maybe think about Scottish independence. But there's not a lot of stuff happening, is there?
Yeah, not in terms of the wider UK politics scene. Lots of things to probably do in terms of talking about the SNP and how they've run Scotland. But in terms of the UK, Sturgeon not had much of an impact so far.
So, no score draw. Elected mayors, I went for Sadiq Khan and you went for Andy Street.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Street, of course, Conservative mayor for the West Midlands and former head of John Lewis, not to be confused with Andy Street, who was the former head of Oxford University Conservative Association.
Yes.
Very different Andy Street.
Very, very different Andy Street. One used blue on all of his leaflets. This one uses green.
Mm. Again, it's really, I think, hard for mayors to have a little bit of an impact on the UK political scene, because the actual powers they have are quite limited. I've seen a few stories attacking Sadiq Khan for not being tougher on knife crime, and we're hoping to do a podcast on knife crime later on, so I don't really want to talk about that in too much detail, but I think it's hard to know exactly how much of it is down to the mayor and what he can do, how much of it is down to actually national police cuts. Andy Street, on the other hand, is basically taking the credit for stuff that Birmingham Council has done, like the Commonwealth Games. He's gone to Sweden, I think, to try and solve homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a little bit more funding for Birmingham through council tax, I think, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's managed to secure some extra devolution powers and a bit and money. Yes, I mean, but what I would say though is that actually you kind of poo-poo that as an achievement, but actually, given the circumstances, and you know who's in government, you know, Theresa May, Philip Hammond, not exactly the most radical devolutionists around. When it comes to out powers,
I'm shocked that a Tory government will give money to a Tory mayor. I'm sure if Sean Simon would have asked for money,
no, which is I 100% agree with that. But that still doesn't change the fact that he's done that, and that means he's got influence, and that means he's got power. And the point of this is to say who's having the biggest impact. Where's the actual success story for Khan?
He's got very good approval ratings.
Wonderful, but that's not influence. You can poo-poo what Street's done and say it's minor. Yes, you can put it down to the fact that he's a Tory, but he's still done stuff. And Sadiq, this year, what's he done?
He's got wonderful approval ratings.
My point exactly. So I honestly believe that that's 1-0 to Street at the moment.
Okay.
That could change radically. Sadiq Khan is in a much stronger position just by virtue of being Mayor of London. And the Mayor of London has a lot of more influence than any other mayor just by virtue of who he is and the city he represents.
Mm. When Sadiq Khan becomes a much maligned foreign secretary in 2 years' time.
Exactly, yeah.
Then the last one was activist / commentator. I'm going to give myself a big tick for my wildcard pick, which was Carol Cadwallader, given all the Cambridge Analytica Facebook stuff, there's been a bit of an influence on that. I'm going to give myself a big tick for that. Well done, me. We can make good predictions on this podcast occasionally. The actual picks, though, my proper pick was Nick Timothy, and your pick was Owen Jones.
Yep.
And this is where it gets a little bit more interesting. So again, at the start of the year, what we said in the podcast was, it would be a measure of Nick Timothy's influence on Theresa May still to see what happened to Justine Greening, because Nick Timothy had written a column for The Sun in which he said, questioned Justine Greening's position, criticised her record as education secretary because she wasn't doing insane things like backing grammar schools.
And lo and behold, what happens?
Justine Greening refuses to move from education and is sacked. On the other hand, though, Owen Jones is an influential figure on the left. You picked him because of the unseat campaigning he's doing and trying to rouse Labour activists. From what I can tell on Twitter, they're going pretty well. He seems to be doing them all over the country, getting lots of attendances and drumming up support for Labour in the locals, which is good. I think also he's becoming a very, very influential commentator in terms of line to take for a certain segment of the left.
The Corbynite sector of the left.
Indeed. He has come out and said that we should have an all-out war on anti-Semitism, which is...
The least you can do.
I think a lot of people are still looking to him for guidance, and he's one of those few kind of old-fashioned commentators where you go to for a line to take. And he is, I think, is on Twitter anyway, a fairly divisive figure, but I don't think there's any doubting his influence at the moment.
No, absolutely.
But in terms of who's got more influence in the government, if we're going to go Nick Timothy.
Yes, yeah, obviously. I still feel good about my pick for Owen Jones by the end of the year. Jones, you'll be able to point to much more instances of Jones being influential across British politics, as well as the left, than you will with Nick Timothy, because really, are they gonna? Is he consistently being advising Theresa May? Probably not. I think Jones may be a bit of a slow burn, but I'd say long term he's probably actually the winner.
Ooh.
You don't get a point for Cadwallader.
I don't get a point for Cadwallader.
Because I didn't choose another one.
Okay. So. Well, in that case, I make it 3-3. I still say that I should win because I picked Carol Cadwallader as well as a wild card.
In a tie break situation.
I feel like as a moral victory. Do you want to pick a wild card now?
No, I don't want to pick a wild card. I'm actually quite content with my options for the most part. So.
Yeah, I think what it shows is that it's, in terms of the actual government agenda, there isn't a lot going on at the moment, and that does make it really hard to say. It'll be interesting to see by the end of the year how far our thoughts will have gone on how influential they are. If you think that we've made the wrong decision in terms of how influential they are, if you want to pick different yardsticks for how influential they are, let us know on our website, notenoughchampagne.com. Or on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. If you want to tell us how influential we are, you can tell me how influential I am at Paperback Rioter.
And you can yell at me for how wrong I am on @CentreRadical.
James Cram is our undoubtedly influential logo designer. You can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram. And Dave Deppert is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. So he definitely has power and influence. Happy flossing, everyone.